Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
You think you got the best of me? Think you've had the last laugh? Bet you think that everything good is gone? Think you left me broken down? Think that I'll come running back? Baby, you don't know me, cause you're dead wrong. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stand a little
taller. Morning, everyone. We're here for public forum. Public forum is an opportunity for the public to get up and speak about anything they'd like to discuss.
Do we now have the ability to look back and say, well, I'm not real sure if we're going to have a development because we may decide to pull a development order because the county might have made a mistake? Guess what a banker's going to say to me when I go to borrow money in Santa Rosa County? Are they going to tell me, well, Sean, I'm not sure I'm going to let you borrow any money because we don't know if this development order is going to stick or not?
The impact of what this is happening is already sending rippling effects. It truly is. We're already hearing people who are wanting to invest in this community, and they've already made commitments to doing it, start putting the brakes on and saying, we're going to wait and see what happens here, because if you start issuing orders and then revoking these things, it does send a very compromised thought to the stakeholders and the professional investors of this industry.
So this is Sean Owens, who ran for state representative, the former mayor of Jay, and then you had Alton Lister, or I think he says Alton, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to say it wrong, just I lived in Alton, Illinois, so I always say that name a little differently than other people who say it the other way. He's the HBA chair, Home Builders Association chair, and one of the things that they were talking about, this is all in connection with that Ibis Road development, which is, again, if you're not familiar, I understand. But you have Westmont, Ibis, Gulf Road. Those are all basically two-block-long dead-end streets that end in what used to be a forest and is now going to become a housing subdivision. And the question is, should Ibis Road be opened or not across a part of land that belongs to the county? And the contractor who was building the homes and wanted to develop the road as a second entrance, basically, they had a portion of their development order, apparently, that said they could, and then that got rescinded. So they feel like they've been lied to. Meanwhile, the residents of Ibis, and to a maybe lesser degree or historically kind of in the same situation, Westmont and Gulf, feel like they were promised they'd always have a dead-end road. And they feel like throughput traffic is going to ruin their quality of life and change the value of their property and all of the things. And this is this is an issue, by the way. The reason I'm spending so much time on this, in part because it's local government, it's very interesting, it's ongoing. This is a much broader, applies to a lot of people, question. Whether it's the idea of how land gets developed and how that changes what you think your property is worth or whether you want to live there, the question of traffic going through a neighborhood is more of a public benefit rather than having these dead-end streets where people feel safe and secure and they let their kids play outside. I almost said their plids K outside. Where they let their kids play outside and don't worry about it. But you now have this issue of if you can have a DO that then gets a portion of it changed and it adversely affects your project plans, are you going to be able to, get loans? Is this going to have an adverse effect on development in the bulk of the county? Because if developers don't believe that they can count on the development orders, then banks aren't going to be willing to loan the money. That was Sean Owens' point. Edwin Henry says, and he's a big local builder, and he says, look, Hurlburt has told us that they need several hundred, maybe 1,000 new homes in our area. They're going to find housing where they need it. Maybe they decide to find it in Okaloosa County instead of in Escambia County.
I think we need to really consider the message we might be sending to these people. They're not going to come up here and threaten you. They're just going to do their job, and they're going to find a place somewhere else to put these additional missions that could be housed here and benefit our community. So I just want to give you a warning. I think you need to consider this strongly, the denial of an approved development order and stopping it from going forward, what message that sends for our economic development efforts. What we do as a county is great, but it pales in comparison to what's being done at Eglin and Horvathville.
I mean, if you can't provide housing for the expanded military mission, that military mission will go somewhere else, or the housing will go somewhere else. And, you know, so you have this, on the one hand, the residents feel lied to and betrayed, and certainly everybody understands how much, if you live on a dead-end street, you do not want it opened up behind you, a practice that happens all the time. On the other hand, you have this need for growth, need for infill housing. You know, you want to fill in the areas that are going to become more dense instead of areas farther out, because that's what's killing the farmland, is all this sprawl. Because if the houses have to go somewhere, you'd rather have them go into the more dense areas rather than out into the, the farmland area. But now you have this question of, well, who's got the right of this historically? I thought I knew, and the more I hear it explained, the less I feel sure about anything. Kerry Smith says the developer has already said that they're going to sue us over this. So this is going to go to court, and, you know, we'll find out who's got the right of it. At least that's what it seems like. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
29 southbound, just south of 9 Mile Road, all the way to Detroit. We've got a vehicle crash with a roadblock at Highway 29 in Detroit. So if you're headed southbound, just south of 9 Mile, please be aware of that. Also, North Blue Angel Parkway and Softly Pines Road. We've got an accident there that's a hit and run, but the road is blocked. First responders are on the scene there. Other than that, we're looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. And just to kind of lay out some of the issues maybe a little bit, everybody on both sides has claims. The people of Ibis Road, or if you happen to be the people living in your dead-end street, your cul-de-sac street, you got a promise and you got votes, at least a vote, that it would never be opened. And it is county land that's there. On the other hand, you have a development order. That's also a promise or a vote or an assignment of a right. You have your property. If you're a resident, you're trying to protect it, your way of life. The developers are also protecting their property, their investment, and trying to create a way of life for other people who will eventually move in there. There's a lot on both sides of this issue. Meanwhile, Steve Moorhead, who is an attorney who showed up to represent the developer, he says, not only all of this, but you all have completely botched your obligation to give us due process in this issue. Because, by the way, I'm playing a lot of the kind of defend the developer clips today, because I've played a lot of the defend the Ibis Road clips before, and they spoke a lot at the meeting as well. And their concerns are fair. They really are. Here's Steve Moorhead.
A fundamental foundation of our government is due process. It's in our Constitution twice. It's in our Florida Constitution. It's been in our fabric of our laws for 1,000 years. And due process, what that means is you give a person whose rights are being affected notice that their rights are being affected, and you give them an opportunity to be heard before you make your decisions. And clearly that hasn't happened here. The decisions have already been made. You've already announced what your decisions were, and you have yet to, one, call us and let us know what's going on, or two, give us an opportunity to talk to you. This is the first chance that we've had to do that.
And in public forum is certainly not the ideal situation for that. And he went farther, because it looks like Tom Danheiser, who's a very capable attorney, former judge, Kerry Smith didn't name him, but it seemed like there was misinformation coming from somewhere. And I don't know whether it was Tom or somebody else, but, you know, Tom is going to have to defend the county on this in court. And, you know, Steve Moorhead is saying that Tom should know better than to do things this way, having been a former judge.
And it's appalling to me that we're to this point. No one is above the law. Santa Rosa County is not above the law. And there are two sides to every story. You can watch Fox News and MSNBC and realize there's two perspectives on everything. When it was Judge Danheiser, he could tell you that when he was sitting in the courtroom, you heard from the plaintiff, the defendant, the state, the defense, you heard from both sides before you made a decision. And it's disappointing that you're sitting in a quasi-judicial capacity and you haven't done that. You haven't listened to what we have to say.
Now, it'd be the role of the attorney maybe to advise the county that they should hear more from the other side on this. But obviously, Judge Danheiser, and now county attorney, it's not a quasi-judicial situation, and he's not the judge, he's the advocate, just like Steve Moorhead is the advocate for the contrary sides in this particular case. One other note on this, something that is just incredibly frustrating, is there has been apparently a destruction of equipment by somebody against the developer.
Understand where the Ibis folks are. if I were in their situation, I may have the same feelings as them. But you know, the matter has gotten out of hand, and we heard about the trespass and the damage. We're not talking about vandalism like painting. We're talking about actually drilling into blocks and ruining equipment. May I have additional time, please?
No, sir. You won't be able to have additional time, but
because it's public forum.
How do we get have an opportunity to be heard and say what our side of this is? I'm representing a party to this act, and his rights are being affected.
Mr. Chairman, I'd recommend he be given an extra few minutes. The accumulation of the opposition has been longer than three.
And I thought that was a very nice, I mean, that was, he didn't have to, but that's Tom Danheiser stepping in and saying, yeah, all these other people have been up here speaking for, you know, half hour so far on their concerns about Ibis Road from the resident side. And giving Steve 6 minutes, you know, seemed fair. Ironically, he didn't say much after that. That I thought was worthy of playing, but it was a good note, and it was a good effort to give a little bit of balance to the conversation. $200,000 worth of damage to, I don't know, an excavator, bulldozer, something of that sort, or maybe more than one, and apparently drilling into the engine block. Vandalism. Now, who did it? Well, we don't know. Okay, I mean, we don't know. Could it have been kids? Yeah, probably unlikely. I mean, kids throw paint. And TP and, you know, like, right. Could it have been a disgruntled employee? I mean, could have been. Could have been. But unfortunately, the most likely, okay, if you just have to take a shot based on the evidence, unless you think it was self-inflicted in a false flag operation, which all this seems unlikely, an angry resident, you know, somebody who's gotten worked up over this issue and took matters into their own law-breaking hands. Now, there's nobody I can hope who did it. Because everybody who might have done it's terrible. But, you know, there's been some criticism of particularly Colton Wright for mentioning that. But what other conclusion would you draw as a reasonable conclusion? So this has gotten definitely out of hand. And there's one additional perspective on this that I had not been thinking of. And I really appreciate Austin Tenpenny, who is the president of the Home Builders Association. He made a comment that inadvertently gave me a thought that I just had not had, except he said it. So let me play this for you, and I'll talk about it for a second.
Actions you guys have taken are extremely concerning. I've gone through this exact process myself as a developer and builder multiple times. Due process is a real thing. And the precedent that has been set is extremely dangerous and very concerning. This action is not just a reversal of a single decision. It sets a dangerous precedent that undermines the integrity of the development process of Santa Rosa County. When a development order is approved, it represents more than a rubber stamp. It represents the culmination of a detailed process with planning, engineering, legal review, and financial investment based on the good faith that the county's word is good. To rescind that order after the fact signals to developers, business owners, and investors that decisions made by this body are not final, that they are subject to the reversal based on political pressure or shifting opinions. That is not governance, that is instability. And instability is the fastest way to stop growth and drive away capital and damage the credibility of this county.
That's terribly accurate. If people don't believe that the political situation is stable, or the economic situation is stable, or both, they'll take their money and go elsewhere. It's the reason why sometimes even bad decisions left in place are better than making the change to a good decision, because the instability caused by the change can be as much a negative as just the original bad problem. You know, the fix and the fix and the fix can be worse than just having the error perpetuated. But I thought that was such an interesting observation that it, because the other people have been saying the same thing. This could kill growth, right? This could deter people from investing, deter banks from giving support, deter people from wanting to do business in Santa Rosa County. Here was the thing that it made me think of. The allegation about the Pitchfork Posse people has been that this is their goal. That their goal is to end growth. That their goal is to stop people from coming here. That their solution is, you know, all of these little issues are just little issues, but the real issue is we will do whatever it takes to stop the cutting of the trees, to stop the expansion of the, you know, development, to stop homes. We just want it to stop. And so when you say that creating chaos, which they do, and creating disharmony and dysfunction and all of this uncertainty, which they do, that creating chaos thwarts growth, you might be literally telling them that their plan is working. Because other people hear that and think, oh, that's terrible. We're killing growth. And some people are like, kill the growth, kill the growth. So just it's a complicated situation. We still haven't even gotten into the issue of whether grids or dead-end streets is better as a public policy. I will definitely take that up next hour, though, because that is a fascinating question. The more I think about it, the more interesting it gets, because it is not an obvious answer. And like I said, we ought to talk about that, particularly because this is a publicly owned piece of property that would be needed to use in the connector. And what is for the public benefit? Are grids better than dead-end streets, or are dead-end streets better than grids? Like I said, we'll talk about that next hour. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
If you are on Highway 29 right now, headed just south of West 9 Mile Road, going southbound, there's major, major blockage right there. The accident has been cleared up on one, but I'm seeing that maybe another one just happened, but the backups are way past East 9 Mile Road right now, so just be aware of that. Let's see here. There was also the other one that happened in Blue Angel Parkway and Softly Pines Road. Roadway is clear there again, but we're still seeing some delays. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Here's today's Strength for Life.
Excuses are destroying your success. Luke 14 records the devastating effects of being an excuse maker. One man said that he couldn't attend the master's supper because he had to prove oxen, while another said he had purchased land that he must go see. Yet a third man had just married a wife and therefore he couldn't attend. Their excuses were cloaked in half-truths, nonsense, and self-will. As a result, the master invited the poor, halt, lame, and blind to his dinner. The self-willed people rejected the supper, but the desperate-hearted people received the supper. In the seats of the original invitees sat poor, halt, lame, and blind. If excuse makers don't want to enjoy the benefits that God provides, someone else will. You can choose your excuses, but you don't get to choose the consequences. So beware of being an excuse maker.
For more Strength for Life, check out our website at strengthforlife.church.
Delicious seafood is what you'll find at Davis Catfish House. Davis Catfish serves only the best Mississippi catfish, fresh Gulf seafood, and delicious homemade sides. Weekday specials include two times Tuesday, six free shrimp added to the six-piece dinner. Wednesdays offer lunch basket specials. And everybody's favorite, Shrimp-tastic Thursday, $5 off all-you-can-eat shrimp. Serving fresh seafood daily, visit Davis Catfish House on Dogwood Drive in Milton. See you at David's.
Pensacola Little Theater is proud to present Trail to Oregon, May 2nd to 11th, a lively and humorous musical that follows the misadventures of a quirky pioneer family as they journey westward along the Oregon Trail in the 19th century. Led by the bumbling but well-meaning father, the family encounters a series of obstacles and colorful characters along the way, including bandits, buffalo stampedes, and the dreaded dysentery. Secure your tickets for this show online at PensacolaLittleTheater.com or at the PLT box office. This show contains mature themes and language.
Join Acupuncture and Wellness of Pensacola this Friday at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Dr. Rebecca Gibbons will be here to answer your questions about the many benefits of acupuncture. If you suffer from chronic back pain, neuropathy, or joint pain, or even stress and anxiety, this is a show you will not want to miss this Friday at 9 with Acupuncture and Wellness of Pensacola on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Text or call with your questions, 850-437-1620.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings before Pep Talk on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Where are we going?
Train station.
News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Can I just say, holy smokes, I was curious to see what the incident was like over there on Softly Pines Road and Softly Field Road and Pine Forest. And I happened to pull up the Escambia County Sheriff's Office incident map. There's a lot of stuff going on for a Wednesday at 7:30. We got a man down up in Molino. We got a burglary in like the Ensley vicinity, and accident in Ensley, a citizen assist, a cardiac arrest in Ferry Pass. We got several responses over there to the Softly Field incident, trespassing down on the southwest side. I mean, just your officers are busy today. I mean, that it's good that they're responsive, and it's bad that they have so many things they have to respond to. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Well, President Trump has signed an executive order aimed at easing the effect of tariffs on the auto industry.
Still in place, 25% tariffs on imported vehicles, and starting later this week, 25% on parts outside of the USMCA trade agreement. But the new order prevents automakers paying those import fees from also paying other duties like those on steel and aluminum.
And it would allow vehicles that go through the final assembly process in the U.S. to qualify for partial reimbursements on parts-related levies for 2 years.
Yeah, and it's a graduated down, like it's 3.75% and then 2.5%. It's meant to be an incentive to give them a little bit of time to move their manufacturing, or at least assembly operations, back here to the United States. Thanks so much for the update, David.
I'm CJ Papa, the crowd in Warren, Michigan, cheering on President Trump.
The heartland of our nation to celebrate the most successful first 100 days of any administration in the history of our country. And that's according to many, many people.
The president boasting about a 25% tariff on all foreign automobiles.
This is going to create more jobs in this state and this country.
But his message on the economy receiving a mixed response from the public. Democrats on the Senate floor preaching gloom and doom.
Unimaginable amount of havoc and harm President Donald Trump has caused for Wisconsinites.
Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin. Severe weather leaves at least three people dead. Strong storms knocking out power from the plains to the northeast. Pennsylvania taking a major punch from Mother Nature. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 7:31 at News Radio 92.3 right now, 72. We've got mostly cloudy skies this morning. We'll get more on our forecast with Brooke Richardson in just a few minutes here. Lifeguards on Pensacola Beach were busy last weekend. More than 40 water rescues reported at Casino Beach. Water Safety Chief Dave Greenwood says they have to be very proficient in the water.
We train on Saturdays and Sundays, and it's 4 weekends in a row. So it's approximately 80 hours of pre-service training. It's broken down into surf rescue and emergency response in the aquatic environment.
And Greenwood says the training process for lifeguards begins very early in the year. In January, there were 25 guards on duty last weekend, a number Greenwood says is going to go up once many of their lifeguards are done with school for the summer. Escambia County investigators say they recently wrapped up an investigation into a stabbing in Ensley.
Friends of a man say, hey, they haven't seen him in a while. So they go to the apartment where he lives, or the house that he lives in, and find him deceased. They call us up, and we find a male that had been, looked like he had been stabbed a couple times in the neck, the investigation revealed. And like all good detectives, we start to look at the roommate first.
Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons, he tells News Radio investigators tracked that roommate to Okaloosa County, where they worked with investigators there. In the end, 34-year-old Kyle Miller was charged with a homicide. Simmons didn't have a motive, but he did say that the two had been roommates for a long time and moved to Pensacola together from another state. Well, an investigation underway after a two-seater airplane crashed into Crescent Lake in Putnam County yesterday. Investigators say it happened near Bear Island yesterday morning. The pilot and co-pilot were safely rescued from the crashed airplane with no injuries. Governor DeSantis is expected to sign a bill that would ban fluoride in public drinking water soon. It was passed through the state house yesterday. It's already cleared the Senate. Democrats were against the measure.
Fluoridation has saved families and taxpayers millions in dental care each year, worsening health disparities, knowing that vulnerable populations would suffer the most.
That is State Representative Anna Eskamani. If it's signed by the governor, the ban would go into effect in July. Utah has also banned fluoride in drinking water. Their ban goes into effect next week. Well, Escambia deputies were called to Warrington Preparatory Academy yesterday. This is after a student with a gun was reported on campus. Deputies say they did locate that firearm. There were no shots fired. The incident is still under investigation, and so far, no charges have been filed. Escambia County putting the finishing touches on a 1.3-mile nature trail at the Southwest Sports Complex. The county recently planted 10 endangered wild-topped white-topped pitcher plants, that is. They planted those to celebrate Earth Day, the trail part of the Florida Greenways and Trails system. And soon it'll also feature some new amenities like benches and educational signage. Conservation initiatives also include invasive species management and plans for a prescribed burn to promote healthy plant growth and to reduce wildfire risks. The complex is located on Bauer Road. That trail is open to the public daily from sunrise until sunset. 735 at News Radio, and John Pickens has our traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by Frontier Motors, the only dealer Dave Ramsey recommends in Pensacola. That's Frontier Motors on Beverly Parkway. Let's see here. If you are on Woodbine Road over in Pace and you're wondering, well, how it's pretty well backed up all the way to Guernsey Road to Highway 90. So if you're headed that way, you might want to plan an alternate route because that's about a 15 to 20 minute delay just in that area alone. And then Highway 29 southbound, just north of East 9 Mile Road, going southbound all the way to Detroit Boulevard. We're seeing some major delays there. It's about a 20, 25-minute delay. But other than that, things are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. And right now it is 7:36. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 forecast with Brooke Richardson.
We are going to be looking at a beautiful day today with partly cloudy skies, high near 82 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 70. For Thursday, partly cloudy skies, high near 82. Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 70 degrees. Keeping a chance of rain on that Friday, 50% chance of some showers, maybe a thunderstorm, high near 82. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 68. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Weather Center.
It's 72 and cloudy right now. Our next news at 8 and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Private sector payrolls rose by just 62,000 for the month, the smallest gain since July of 2024. This is down from 147,000 in March and missed the Dow Jones consensus estimate for an increase of 120,000. The Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index for March is also due out in 10 minutes. Economists polled by Dow Jones see no gain for March and a reading of 2.2% for headline inflation. The PCE is closely watched by the Federal Reserve and is one of its preferred inflation metrics. Yum! Brands, the parent of KFC, Pizza Hut, and Taco Bell, posted mixed first quarter results as earnings beat Wall Street estimates but revenue missed. Pizza Hut's same-store sales fell more than expected. Yum! Brands said sales rose 12% in the first quarter. Futures are mixed. Tuesday, the Dow Industrials gained 300, the NASDAQ up 95, the S&P 500 up 32. Once again, futures are mixed. That's your money now.
Pensacola Navy Days is presented by Navy Federal Credit Union and the Pensacola Ice Flyers. May 9th through 11th, join us as we honor the pride and dedication of our military community and Pensacola's military heritage. Start the celebration Friday, May 9th at AC Reed for the inaugural Pensacola Navy Days Golf Tournament or at the Black Tie Night at the Museum Gala. Saturday, May 10th, we'll take to the streets for the Pensacola Navy Days 4K race and parade, then head over to Plaza de Luna for Family Fun Fest. Get the details and tickets at PensacolaNavyDays.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance specialist for university housing, he knows college students can major in wear and tear. Plus, housing so many students doesn't leave a lot of room to house all the supplies he needs. That's where Grainger comes in. With over a million industrial-grade products and fast, dependable delivery, Grainger carries the quality products he needs so he doesn't have to. From a new door hinge to a whole new faucet. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Pep Talk? What's Pep Talk?
It's the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Experts? Experts in real estate?
Yes, that's us, Angela. We are the Pep Talk for real estate.
What will we talk about, Will?
We'll talk about the real estate industry.
Well, we don't just want to answer our own questions.
We want to answer the listeners' questions. Tune in tomorrow at 10 a.m. and we'll talk about real estate.
And whatever real estate questions you have.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts.
Good morning, 740 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's great to have you with us. Joining us by phone, we have Mayor D.C. Reeves, Mayor of the City of Pensacola, fresh off of his trip to the, I forget if it's the Florida leadership or if it's the Council of Mayors. He's always going to these various things, and it's good for our community, I think. But, Mayor, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Yeah, Andrew, thanks for having me.
What were you at last week?
I was at Leadership Florida, our final meeting of the
Leadership Florida
year. So down in Miami, and then annual meeting in June, and all done with it. But yeah, great experience. And as a matter of fact, one of the things I announced yesterday was an economic grant through the National League of Cities. I didn't even know about it until I went to the Leadership Florida meeting in Jacksonville, and then we went from not knowing anything about it to winning it. So to your point, you know, sometimes it's nice to get out there and see best practices and what's going on, and now in, it has a positive financial impact to the city too.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of you know, diverse sources of information, let alone for, you know, making associations and getting actual, you know, opportunities, because it's funny when you're trying to solve problems and then you're listening to a variety of inputs, you might get a solution in a place you didn't expect it. So I, you know, hanging out with or seeing different environments, I used to always problems I'd be working on at work, and then I go to hear a sermon, and I'm like, oh, well, that's not related, but it kind of is in my head, so let's fix it, you know? So I love that you go out and look at these things, and in this case, it turns out to be a grant. Speaking of that, I think one of the lesser appreciated stories of the last couple of weeks is this affordable housing grant that you got for working with the Navy base. I mean, it's only $600,000, yeah. But so maybe not big and decisive, but this could be the start of something big, and if it's going to affect affordable housing availability for members of the military, that's huge.
Yeah, and I look at our strategy, whether it's Baptist Hospital, whether it's grants like that, whether it's Malcolm Young property, the partnership with the land trust on three scattered sites, all of those things is we try to collect as many valuable chips as we can, that because we all know that any level of affordability needs subsidy, right? We talk about that all the time. So how does the city build subsidy? Well, it's much, much harder to write a check out of the general fund or write a check out of. So what do? We start a grants office and see if we can get money there. We see what property we have, who are our partners, or we put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into a project like Baptist that will eventually be 38 acres of leverageable opportunity to create affordability in our city. So so we're always, you know, head on a swivel, always looking at what our opportunities are. To create subsidy,
right,
which therefore allows to create affordability. Without subsidy, there is no such thing as affordable housing or an affordable housing initiative. So this is yet another example that we're excited about. It's a rare grant that doesn't have a million rules. That's what we like. We can put it into a project. We can buy property with it. And we've got a nice runway to make sure that we have time to make the right decision. So we're very, very excited about it.
Speaking of housing and a project that, you know, you and I have been talking about quite a bit, and of course, you know, even predates you coming into office, but still, the Baptist move has left that campus on the west side of the city of Pensacola vacant and now trying to figure out what to do with it. We finally have bids, we have numbers, we have a timeline. The question, there'd been a bid challenge, but that had to do with one company not having their proper, licensing, and so they were out, and now you're into a second round of negotiations. The question had been raised, why didn't you just go with the cheapest bid? And the answer here is, well, cheapest isn't always best, right?
Exactly. And as I said in my press conference yesterday, I would be very disappointed in my staff if all they ever brought me with the dozens of procurements that we've had since I've been mayor, and they just said, well, Mayor, our work is done here. We had the cheapest. Here's the cheapest number, and that's it. Now, sometimes that does make sense. If the rules of engagement are very basic, if it's, cutting the grass in this particular park, and it's very clear what the rules are, and every bid has a certain level of credibility, then fine. But a $17 million demolition project that has to not only knock a hospital down, it has to remediate asbestos and other toxins. It's got to drive dozens of trucks a day up and down neighborhood roads. It's got several other complex factors involved in this that have less to do with price. And that doesn't even approach the subject of, is it cheaper? It's cheaper on paper. And what it tells me is if we were to be that simple-minded about it, then the smart thing for every firm to do is to just give us the lowest possible price they can put on paper, and then they can just value add everything against us.
They can change order in a death later, right?
Exactly. That's what the low, if you actually read the information, which I strongly suggest everybody commenting on it does, then the lowest bid at $10.5 million gives zero contingency, unlike the higher bids, for certain remediation that we know is there. So are we saying it's more fiscally responsible to sign up for an open-ended blank check as it pertains to remediation? Of course not. And so you really have to look at – you have to take apples and oranges, and that's why we have a great staff and a great team that puts this together. And second to that is the conversation about the county and the $2 million from the county. Whether we adon with number one that, as you just accurately said, was disqualified, there was a new state license that just came into play last year that they did not have. But if they – if regardless of if 14.41 or 13.3 million won, in either case as it pertains to the county – that still puts us over the 15.9 once you add contingency and once you add an owner's rep, which are just mandatory for this project to work. So the argument that, well, we should pick one cheaper, well, that's a moot point. The only variable there is whether how much money the mayor and the city has to go find in addition to the 15.9 that's been discussed. So, you know, we all want to do what's best for our – with tax dollars, what we all want – to do stretch everybody's dollar as long as possible. But sometimes doing that also means selecting on its face the higher quality bid that's thought through all of the problems and all of that to ensure that we protect the taxpayer dollar.
Right.
And so,
the shoes that are half the price but last a third as long are not actually cheaper in the long run, right? That's the problem. We're talking to Mayor D.C. Reeves. Mayor, hang on for me for just a second. Let me get a quick traffic report in here. I know a lot of stuff going on this morning. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by Knox Pest Control, their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, visit KnoxPest.com. Knox them out. No accidents to report to you right now. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Back to Mayor D.C. Reeves. This part of the issue, and you made me think about this. I'd never thought about it quite this way, but, you know, we know that going with the lowest bidder cost us all kinds of problems when it came to the sailfish sign replacement. Lowest bidder isn't always best. People say Skanska, right. You know, going with the lowest bidder on the bridge cost us problems. But in a way I'd never thought of before that, you know, who knows, but that maybe their decision not to, you know, move the barges out of the way was borne by the fact that they had made a similar decision recently and just didn't want to incur the cost because they were starting to run up against their margins. Like, that's one of the problems with going with the lowest bidder is you create weird incentives for people to do the wrong thing sometimes, and all of that has to be taken into account. I did want to ask you a question, though, just because it had come up.
Yeah.
The issue of concrete crushing on-site versus at a remote location, it will not be happening on site at Baptist. Is that your goal?
Absolutely. Now, Okay. Now the original winning bidder, Sessler, had already priced that. And so yet again, another example of, yes, that their price may have been a little higher, but there were apples and there were oranges.
Yeah.
And so I certainly expect in my negotiation with North Star, and I don't think we'll be a surprise to them, that that's what we're going to be looking to do. And whether that can be folded into the cost or not. But I think that's a vital, vital piece of this because this is going to be a long project, and we have to respect the neighbors as best that we can. So sometimes when you think that just pick the cheapest means we crush rock 24 hours a day, for example, on site, would that be better for our community? Those are the things that we're absolutely going to be prioritizing. I can't say where that's going to go. Because, you know, we'll have to negotiate through with that. But that is absolutely my intention right now, is to be able to crush that offsite and then have it trucked offsite, and then crushed offsite.
And by the way, this is a small note, but I actually appreciate in the meeting on Thursday night when you and Erica Garancagnolo both kind of were reluctant to say things that you could have said to satisfy the, you know, transparency question, but would have actually adversely affected your ability to negotiate and make decisions. So, you know, I always like it when people take the harder road, even though it makes them maybe look bad, because I don't think it makes you look bad. I think it makes you look smart. So I actually appreciate that. A related question, just because I know the funding for a lot of the demolition at Baptist is coming from the state, and, you know, you're having to make progress in order to show good faith that you deserve to keep that money. When we had Alex Andrade on the show on Friday, I had asked him the question of, does all the bickering, fighting, disagreement, whatever, between him and the governor or Michelle Salzman and the governor, does that jeopardize any of the funding proposals that he's trying to get for our area? And he said he absolutely believes the governor is going to veto his funding request for this area. The question is then whether the House and the Senate are going to override those vetoes. Are you worried about any of that, either with the Baptist funding, which has already been promised, or with ongoing projects that the city's looking to benefit from the state with? Is that an issue for you right now?
I think a big part of this job and Representative Andrade's job and all of ours is to be reading tea leaves, right? Of like, you know, what happens, you know, we pull this lever and then what happens and what the consequences are, and at least whether we like them or not, you know, being mindful of those. So certainly, you know, we keep an eye on any of those types of things at the state level, at the federal level. I think it's important to point out what gets lost in the negotiating through the media phase of this between Commissioner Kohler and myself about what we should do with the bid at Baptist. I think on the state side, what I believe was important was that we have a donation agreement that is agreed upon and I believe signed by Baptist waiting on us. Right now that's ready to go, which means we are committed to this project.
Right.
And I know that was really the important barometer from the state perspective. Not that they don't want it to see it all the way done, and certainly we do too. We're all motivated for that. But what's getting lost in this is we do have an agreement. We are committed to this project. What is now taking the headlines is $2 million of the $16 million, and really over 20 if you include our grant funding, that's already committed to this. So this is a very small sliver in the grand scheme of things, but it's just the final step to be able to get it done. So, of course, we're mindful of those things. I don't believe any of our state funding requests got through anyway. We don't have as much to worry about from that perspective this session.
When you get told no in the first place, you don't have to worry about losing it. I guess that's, you know, yeah, that's unfortunately.
So we don't have as much to worry about this session. And, you know, obviously Senator Brockton and everybody was great to us the last couple of years. That happens sometimes. I would sure, you know, Representative Andrade could speak better to this than me, but I certainly would expect next year is not going to be any more friendly up there in Tallahassee, doesn't feel like. Obviously, we're looking at this as a multi-year, kind of situation, whatever, for better or for worse. So we just do what we can and offer what we can and, you know, try to build relationships hang on tight, I guess.
You know, one of the things that we're not going to have too much time to talk about it, but I just didn't want to give you kudos. I had said, seeking out ECUA as helping you with the connectivity on the Portland Luz to save money for everybody, great. Bringing a restroom facility to Veterans Memorial Park, which seems like it's on the cusp of actually happening finally, unrelated to the other project. Great. I mean, these are good things that are happening. The Sun Trail, you know, having a, multi-use path basically eventually going to connect Bayou Chico all the way to the Chappie James Bridge. I mean, great. Like, these are all, there's some really, really good things going on. And sometimes it gets lost a little bit in the, you know, the conversation about this or that sort of controversial issue. So, I just wanted to give you a little bit of credit for some of that because it's, you know, things seem to be progressing. We always like to end with a little bit of a lightning round, quick questions. So first question for DC Reeves. Do you set any of your clocks fast? If so, by how much?
I used to, trying to get up for school, but no, I don't, man. I try to be as accurate as possible as the mayor of your city, so I stick them exactly where they should be. And, you know, Apple iPhones has changed that the game for us, you know, more than when we were growing up, you know.
Do you, when you fill the dishwasher, do you do the dishwasher or does your girlfriend do the dishwasher? Because it's not fair to ask you if she does the work.
Well, if she's listening, she does it all the time. If she's not, then it's about 50-50.
Okay. When you're filling cups into the top level, do the cups go between the pegs or on the pegs?
Depends on if they're plastic or glass, Andrew. I'm going to say
so wishy-washy.
I used to put them on. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. I would say I used to be back in my younger, more immature days. I used to put them on the peg, and now I've put them between if it's appropriate.
Okay, so you've matured. I appreciate that. And then the last question, and I'm actually really curious about this because you use your cell phone a lot. Does your cell phone ever die? And at what point are you actually worried about battery life for your cell phone? Like, what's the number where you start to get a little concerned?
It depends on how my day went. If it's if it was a long day, then I just let it die. I probably about when I get under 5%, then I feel like I've got to take action.
So that's a very low threat. I mean, that's a, like you'd let it go a long way before you're really worried.
Yeah, but you know, I carry, you know, especially since this job started, I carry those chargers me everywhere, the portable ones. I mean,
okay.
it's hard for me to not, you know, back myself into a charger somewhere. So, again, you know, as your mayor, you know, I try to be online for you as much as possible. So, yeah, I can't think of a – I haven't had a bad scenario lately where I've, you know, lost all the juice.
All right, your fanny pack is full of charging ports. All right, I appreciate that.
That's right.
D.C. Reeves, Mayor of Pensacola, always a pleasure, sir. We'll look forward to talking to you again next week. Thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Fanny pack is full. Okay. I'm still getting
I don't think D.C. Reeves is a fanny pack kind of guy.
I don't either, but it just was hilarious. If you're on I-10 right now, eastbound between Pine Forest and Highway 29, expecting those delays through the construction zone. Also, speaking of Highway 29, just south of 9 Mile Road going southbound, we're still seeing about a 10 to 15 minute delay. And you'll get a small delay on Woodbine Road headed toward Highway 90, where I got I-90 from. But anyway, we're looking good. I'm John Pickens.
I-90's in like Montana.
I was like, I don't know where I came up with I-90.
Nice.
I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
Northwest Florida businesses pay an average 20% more for phone service. Data Revolution wants to change that. We are your local, service-focused VoIP provider. Right now, offering a free bill review and free installation for new customers. No matter where your team is, Data Revolution can help. Experience the service and support only a locally owned company can provide. Join the revolution at datarevs.com.
News Radio 92.3 is proud to be a partner in the success of a lot of local businesses. We want your business to be part of this success story in 2025 with our unique platform to showcase your powerful message. Every day, News Radio's Pensacola Expert Panel provides an opportunity unlike any other. Hi, I'm Meg, host of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Let us help you share your message. Contact us to get you and your business part of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Call 850-262-6000.
Get the midday news live with Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins, 11 to 2, before Guy Benson on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
It's like people only do things because they get paid. And that's just really sad.
That's B-side Cars for you right there, Looking for Love. I think that's off of Heartbeat City. Anyway, 7:58 on News Radio 92.3, great song. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
And good morning, Andrew. The Supreme Court hearing arguments today over what could be the nation's first religious public charter school. This is in Oklahoma, St. Isidore of Seville Catholic Virtual School. They want to join that state's charter school program, the move, though, opposed by charter school advocates who say it could threaten the separation of church and state. The first leg of the Triple Crown coming up this Saturday with the Kentucky Derby. The favorite to win in Louisville this year is a three-year-old horse, you'll like this one, named Journalism, who just won.
Finally, Journalism can win!
Journalism apparently
I
just won
journalism
the
will not
Santa
win like all the other times. Go on.
The Santa Anita Derby, and currently has 3-1 odds. Other favorites this year are Sovereignty with 5-1 odds and Sandman, who's at 6-1.
I can't get over it. I mean, all the jokes around that, right? Like, you know, Journalism wins, it'll just be fake news. What if Journalism gets disqualified? I mean, I don't know. I don't know why it's entertaining to me, but Who names a horse journalism?
Isn't that a little odd?
Yeah, that's a strange way to do things.